The University of Kentucky Federal Credit Union encourages everyone to promote positivity and random acts of kindness in the community with their Take Care campaign. Follow along on social media using hashtag Take Care or visit ukfcu.org/takecare to learn more. UK Federal Credit Union believes everyone has something positive to share. So join us in offering kind words and positivity with hashtag Take Care. Stop by a UK Federal Credit Union branch to grab a mask or button and show off your positive vibes. Masks and buttons are first come, first served and available for limited time only. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's football time in the Bluegrass. You're listening to the KSR Football Podcast.
Welcome into the KSR Football Podcast, presented by UK Federal Credit Union. Go check out one of their six locations around town today. And this holiday, it's a holly jolly edition of the KSR Football Podcast, where we're only 15 days away from Christmas. 2 weeks and change. I'm Nick Roush. She's Drew Franklin and Freddie Maggard. We're waiting to shame Charles Walker for being late. He's probably just waving down somebody on the side of the street. But Christmas is almost here. Signing day's almost here. That's normal. We're also in a not normal year where the season ended a week later, and now Kentucky's looking for an offensive coordinator. There's a lot happening right now, Drew.
Busy times. It's not just the two sports met there for a couple weeks that wore us out, but we haven't had a big coaching search in a while, so everybody's kind of looking towards that, trying to figure out who candidates might be, who'd be the great hire. You don't like seeing someone lose the job, but as a fan, coaching searches are kind of exciting, looking around, trying to guess and, you know, trying to pick a good person. I tried to find my own candidates. You know, it's kind of a new element that's out of this offseason.
Especially whenever the coaching search isn't because your team like really sucked, so like everybody's fired. It's only like, oh, you just new offensive blood. So
yeah,
and the latest trend is that, oh, this it could be an NFL guy. So everybody immediately just like, oh, let's look at NFL offensive coordinators, look at quarterbacks coach, who was coaching where, and like you're immediately like, well, let's just get the Chiefs quarterbacks. Let's get Patrick Mahomes quarterbacks coach, or let's get the Rams offense coordinator. And it's like, yeah, I mean, could be asking a lot, but you know what? Anything's possible right now. That's the holiday season for you.
It is fun to just pick your favorite NFL offense and go to that team's website and go to their coaching staff and just randomly. I mean, I've never heard of these people that are the secondary assistants, but just randomly pick one that I think would look good in a UK uniform.
Yeah, Eric Bieniemy. Let's get him.
I don't think we can get him.
he's definitely in line for a head coaching job down the road. But it does make it fun, all things considered. Freddie, I know this is kind of uncharted waters for most of us. Like, heck, I don't – especially because there's not, like, one specific guy like we've had in previous offensive coordinator searches under Mark Stoops.
Is it or is it not Nick Roush?
Oh, so there could be one guy?
I don't know. I just look at it. I look at how the media is covering this, and I think it's the Josh Allen effect. Would you like to know what the Josh Allen effect is?
I would love to know the Josh Allen effect. If it's the Buffalo Bills Josh Allen effect, you're saying it's going to be Ken Dorsey is the next offensive Lord coordinator? No.
Josh Allen with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, the good Josh Allen. Okay.
Yeah. You know, when I made it, a pretty off the wall claimed that he would be the best player in the class. And I love, you know, remember that whole deal. Mm-hmm. You know, look at media guys and recruiting, and they'll send out various tweets that say this guy's going to be the, you know, just so somebody could come back and say, hey, look, I told you about this guy. And I think that is kind of how the media is covering it. You know, you're throwing out all these spitballs so they could come back and say that they're the first person to report this.
It's kind of lame. I don't like doing that. It just, it feels.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah. Oh, no. You and Adam killed it, man. I mean, y'all doing a great job. But I think so many people's throwing out names. So they, you know, but we'll see. I think the decision lies in the head of Mark Stoops. And you know, as we look at the Kentucky football program, you have Bear Bryant 1, you have Mark Stoops 2. And as far as wins, all-time wins in the programs, and he is at that threshold right now, and I think he's going to make the right decision. I think he understands that this league is an offensive league now, and he will make the transition to that. But I don't think that you know, fans that are expecting the air raid, pure air raid system, it's not realistic at UK. I mean, look at Mississippi State last year, had the best running back in the country, in the conference, and he left the team because Mississippi State's averaging 24 rush yards a game and throws the ball all over the place and loses because people have figured out the air raid. So we'll see, Nick Rouse. We'll see, buddy.
Oh, and we'll see Charles Walker. Hey, Charles, nice to see you
today. Hey, Charles.
Hey, guys, sorry about that. Freddie, what was the Josh Allen effect for the signing class of 2014? Who is going to be the best player in that class?
Charles Walker.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Every time we do this podcast. Sorry, go ahead, Freddie.
No, you go ahead, Drew.
Mine's not important. It's really not. This is all you. I cut you off.
I'm going to send out a tweet on every player in this 2020 class about he's my surprise player and he's going to be the best player in the class and stagger them. That way I can go back to it.
And then just delete it. Delete the other 2023. Yeah.
There you go.
I was going to say, every time we hop on here, I know this is a podcast and our listeners can't see us, but we see each other via Zoom. Shout out 2020. That's life. But Charles always makes me feel worthless because nice shirt. He's at an office. He's got his one of those Apple AirPods in.
Uh-huh.
I haven't bathed.
Hit a vest.
Yeah, I mean, this sweatshirt has kittens on it. My hair's a mess. My breath. I'm glad you all can't smell that. But Charles is like, is that starched? Oh, now he's throwing on his jacket.
Nick looks like he's a member of the Beatles. What's up with your glasses,
Oh,
man?
So the thing – okay, these glasses, they're called blue – glasses or something.
They're blue light
glasses. So when you stare at computer screens all day, it's bad for you, believe it or not, and these glasses are supposed to help. So like I can't, it doesn't look blue through me, but it does when I see it in the mirror. So yeah, I do look like a beetle.
Dad had really cool blue blockers, Nick. I may get you those for Christmas for sunglasses.
On a future podcast, I would like a thorough review of those because I'm also very interested. Like you, I'm looking at a screen 18 hours a day. So please, maybe next time we get together, I know those are pretty new.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a hoax.
Well, see, here's the thing, Charles. I haven't gotten completely, like I've only had them a week, but I have been using less eye drops because my eyeballs are just drier than a desert. So maybe they work to an extent. You know what? If somebody paid to endorse a specific blue white blocking glasses, I would be willing to sing their praises from the mountaintop. So, you know, just throwing that out there. If you know a guy, Maria at KentuckySportsRadio.com for inquiries. But back to the air raid. Charles, you played in the air raid. How weird is that?
I think, again, once again, you can't please the fan base. When you win 10 games and you run the ball, they get mad. Oh, sorry, I'm getting a call. I think when you say this air raid, then you take, okay, well, some days the offense isn't working and you have 4-3 and outs in a row and your defense is on the field for two quarters straight. You know, it doesn't always work. And I'm curious to see who they bring in and what style of offense we play. coach, do whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and I think in particular, we've learned in the state of Mississippi, there's a difference between air raid and just spreading the offense out and going vertical. And that's, I think, the goal of this next one is not only to go vertical, but, hey, maybe utilize the play-action pass a little bit more, because, Freddie, when you got a run game like Kentucky's, they're going to be selling out to try to stop a guy like Chris Rodriguez. You should be able to make the defense pay over the top with some play action.
What Kentucky did not do in 2020 is run effective bootlegs, and I don't know why with the tight ends due to the fact. Well, I mean, you got to look at it. I mean, we say that, but Chris Rodriguez only averaged 12 carries per game. We talked about it earlier, Nick. Chris Rodriguez, Drew, you and Charles will really appreciate this, had four more carries in 2020 than Terry Wilson.
Wow.
Four more carries. So I don't understand what, you know, the bootleg could have really been effective with Chris Rodriguez if he'd had more carries, but you know, you can't go into 2021 without Rodriguez and Keaton Upshaw being the focal point of your offense, because I think that's your best two offensive players. If Darren Kennard comes back, your best three players are Kennard, Upshaw, and Chris Rodriguez, and you cannot go away from the run game. Kentucky's going to have to stay balanced, and I think that's good. And you're going to have to utilize tight ends, because you're going to have Brendan Bates, Keaton Upshaw, Jordan Dingle. I mean, he plays early, and that might be a situation where Kentucky, because you don't have the home run hitters right now at wide receiver, but Look at the waiver wires. I think that's going to be important going into 2021 as well, especially at receiver.
You know, it's bad. Would you
like
Drew?
A fun Chris Rodriguez stat?
Oh, I would like Chris Rodriguez stat.
I'm going to do an if. I like to play ifs because it makes things sound better. If they had counted the touchdown against Auburn, which was a clear touchdown, my man was 6 yards into the end zone with the football, he would have averaged one touchdown every 10 touches.
Jeez.
Goodness gracious.
I mean, even without that, it's 11.3, I think. It's a school record. But I like to give him that one. So I'm calling it every 10 touches he was in the end zone and still didn't get the carries he needed.
Wow. I mean, that stat that he had four more carries than Terry Wilson, Nick and I talked about it earlier today on the Depth Chart podcast, a shameless plug. I can't wrap my mind around that. I really can't. I mean, am I wrong that baffles me that much?
No, not at all.
We spent most of the year screaming, give him the ball.
Yeah.
And it felt like there was
TV on Saturday and it would be more of the same.
There was like two or three games you're like, okay, well, this is going to be the game where he finally gets the ball 20 times. And I think it still only happened once, twice, maybe. I don't blame it for happening in the South Carolina game, because obviously they were trying to get their guys some touches. The guys who got some touch, Justin Rigg was a guy who got some too, the tight end. And I love that we've reached the point where even Freddie is shouting from the mountaintops, throw it to the tight end. That's when you know it's bad.
I mean, because, you know, we saw what Justin Rigg could do on Saturday. I mean, the void routes, the over routes, whatever you want to call them. And then, you know, Upshaw didn't play. He played early, then had a groin injury. And really got to feature Justin, and I thought that was great. But, man, I don't know. There's just a lot of things that are mind-blowing right now for me.
But that's why we're going in a new direction.
I
mean, if they were lining back up and doing more of the same, we could keep complaining. But the move's been made. Hopefully that won't be the case next year, because Keaton Upshaw, he's going to be a big weapon. And I hope we're not screaming from the mountaintops to throw the tight end next year. I hope we're watching it.
Yeah, you know, I'm a stat guy. I'm not so much an advanced stat person, because I really don't understand that. Yeah, some of it.
Too much math.
It's too much. I mean, people don't understand that. But the basic numbers, there are a few that I really wish that I hadn't discovered, and that Wilson to Rodriguez rush ratio is one that I wish I had never found. So, yeah, it is what it is. But we're moving forward. You're right, Drew.
Yeah,
I'll shut up. Moving forward. Thanks for the call.
Well,
well, what's I didn't mean to shut you up. I'm just saying it's exciting that with the coaching change, maybe we will have to stop begging for it to happen.
That's true. Well, I do want to move forward, but I also want to kind of look back on the season as a whole. Because, you know, it is, as much as we might think of the bad, in hindsight, I think the one game we're all going to remember from this game is that ass-kicking the Cats handed the Vols at Neyland Stadium, who right now Tennessee's in the middle of a six-game losing streak. Drew, do you remember when they had, like, they had the longest winning streak in the country? Man.
I do.
That was so long ago.
I almost remember when they were actually a good program. I really got to squint and use that brain. I think I was just 10, 12 years old.
So, Charles, you might not have been alive the last time Tennessee was good.
No, I wasn't. But sadly, they did kind of have my number in college. So that one hurts to say.
No, you got them. You got them, though, right?
We got them.
Yeah, you got them.
Once, but...
Hey,
one,
you know,
one out of three is not,
you ended on a high note, though, okay?
Not the best.
People remember the last one, just like people remember the South Carolina. You win, you remember the last one.
I will say, when you're going against Derek Barnett for 3 years, and you have to literally have to come up with a new, we called it scat, and it was, I guess, a new scheme where a tight end would literally have to stay in motion to the side where Barnett was playing and help the tackle rush, help him block his rush every down. I'd say it's a pretty dominant player.
That's wild.
I'll never forget it. Yeah, I mean, I watch him play on Sundays now, and I'm like, yeah, that's a guy that we legitimately had to come up with a new scheme, and they would motion towards the side. He played on the left tackle, so, you know, we had plays, and it was a call. Hey, CJ, hey, Greg Hart, you have to motion and help the tackle because we're passing the ball or we're running the ball. I mean, that's pretty crazy. Similar to the Josh Allen effect that people had to, you know, guard or help block him. It just shows you, when you have a dominant edge rusher, the rest of your defense can just be decent and you'll be fine.
I mean, the Cleveland Browns are 9-3, and I think they haven't lost a game that Myles Garrett's played. So, like, you got a good pass rusher, it goes a long way. And those guys, they don't grow on trees, luckily, because Kentucky's faced a lot of those guys over the year, not just Derek Barnett, but all sorts of ones. I love that anecdote, Charles. I really do.
Pretty crazy.
Almost as much as I loved that time that Jared Garantano threw that ball to Kentucky and then they scored a touchdown?
Wasn't it like six times?
Well,
did you really narrow it down?
Two of them were touchdowns.
Oh, true.
Yeah. Which,
last night I was shopping on eBay for signed Jarrett Garantano stuff for my dad. But it's amazing. I hope he's not listening. It's amazing how much they charge for that stuff. I want to do it, but $70 for his autograph to just make my dad mad on Christmas is a lot. If it were 30, I would pay 30 to watch my dad knock the Christmas tree over. 70. By the way, that's happening. I'm going to film it and put it on Twitter that morning. But I just, as you bring him up, I want you all to know I spent an hour of my life searching for his autograph on the internet last night.
Hey, Nick, ask that superhero question to these dudes. I mean, I'm sure they're more versed than I am.
Okay. Yeah, this was a question we had on the Depth Chart podcast. If you could have a superhero be the next UK offense coordinator, who would it be?
I'm trying to develop my answer.
There's a lot to choose from.
Loki. All right, you ready? Loki. Even though he's kind of a supervillain versus a hero, but he's the god of deception. So there you go. There's my answer.
Oh,
final answer.
Okay. Yep. So a lot of play action, a lot of misdirection. I like it, Chuck.
Drew? I mean, and it can also duplicate himself and or, I don't know the correct terminology, but, like, you know, form a hologram and then go invisible / pass through. So if he can kind of teach that to our players, be pretty dominant. 1 minute you're at the line, 1 minute you're in the end zone. 100-yard bomb.
Boom.
There you go.
Mine is a little more obscure. I'm thinking it on the fly. I did not know this question was coming, but I'm really confident in my answer. I'm going to take you all to Marvel Comics, to the X-Men. Mm-hmm. The X-Men people. There was a one named Gambit.
Oh yeah, I called him shoot card as a kid because he would shoot cards at people and they were like flaming cards, and he had a cool stick too.
Two of his powers were throwing and charm, and we need an offensive coordinator that will come in here and charm the fan base and the recruits, get them back on board, and then throw accurately next year.
Oh. Huh.
Man, Nick, you're a nerd.
That's a good one.
I like Nick, it because the early 90s X-Men.
What just happened? I don't even like superheroes. What happened?
The early 90s X-Men's on Disney Plus, and that cartoon's making a comeback. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Big X-Men fan when I was young.
Were you saying, Freddie?
I'm going to change mine.
Okay.
I'm going to change mine to the $6 million man.
Oh, yeah. Eastern Kentucky native, Johnny Majors.
Yeah, because he has that vision. He can look across and see the defensive coordinator's play sheet and counter off that. So I'm going $6 million man.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my Doctor Strange because he can see the future and know what the defense is going to do and then change that. So
true. I mean, I guess you could also just say Thanos and, I mean, have all their Infinity Stones. But, yeah, that's no fun.
That's cheating. Yeah, that's, you know. Yeah, but we're not going to cheat. You know, we're not Tennessee over here.
Thank God.
Yeah. You do have a Tennessee orange shirt on.
No, this is DeSales orange. It's okay. much different colors.
Is there a difference?
Yeah, hey, shout out. No, there's a subtle slight difference. But shout out to your St. X Tires truck for beating North Harbor.
Yeah.
I know they didn't have future UK running back Lavelle Wright, but that was still a nice little upset. They're in the state semifinals now.
That's what the Tigers do.
Just don't call them Tiger Tech. That's so lame. It's like the lamest thing ever. It's so lame.
Tiger Tech, baby. Tiger Tech, producing athletes left and right.
like Charles Walker. Charles Faircats
NFL
Walker.
Athletes. Hey, NFL athletes. I was in the NFL for 2.5 days. NFL athletes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the ongoing joke with my buddies.
Hey, I would be happy to tell people I was in the NFL for 2 days.
Hey, you've got the gear to prove it.
Whenever we watch, you know, NFL Sundays, we kind of have a big group that always meets. I'll usually, probably about once every week, just kind of throw out, well, I mean, I would know, you know, I was there. You all weren't. I think they're getting kind of sick of it now, but I usually still get a couple laughs.
It was the Lions, right? You just watch their games and tell everyone what they're doing and how you know the coaches. And
yeah, I mean, rumor has it Patricia got canned because he let nice 5'10 and a half ex-UK punt returner receiver go too early. But I don't know if that's the full reason or not. That's just what's on the Reddit boards.
Heard that from Stenberg, did you?
Martha Firestone Ford actually told me. What?
Speaking of NFL colleagues, I'm going to get my hopes up again, Drew. I'm going to get my hopes up again because the Rams kicker is questionable tonight on Thursday Night Football. So you all might already know the future. Last time we talked about Austin McGinnis kicking and then it didn't happen. Matt Gay played instead. But he's questionable tonight, and if he can't go, they're going to have to promote Austin from the practice squad. And I just know I'm going to get my heart broken again. It's inevitable.
Was it 3 or 4 weeks ago? We were pretty certain he was going to make his debut on Monday Night Football. And then that afternoon, the reports come out that they left him on the practice squad and went with someone else. It just ripped my heart out of my soul. I don't know that I can get up for tonight. It's clearly possible. Might even be call it likely. I just can't get excited about it. I'll be watching, but I can't be let down again. The Rams really like to beat me up.
Yeah, they do. They do, which I think leads me to ask you, how would you feel if Jeff Fisher, a guy who the Rams beat up, returned to Nashville as Vanderbilt's next head football coach?
First of all, when you said lead me to ask you, I thought you were going to start talking about basketball and turnovers. Devin asked you, but even worse than basketball turnovers would be my hero, Jeff Fisher, coaching an SEC rival. Can't do it. We got to get in front of this train. Stop it. It cannot happen. You know, the joke is that he always goes 500. I think he might be all right at Vandy. 500 would be
good. 6-6 is great at Vanderbilt. Like, it's a match made in heaven.
We say this all the time. We like making fun of our rivals and their coaches. Muschamp, love talking about how bad he is. But then when they get fired, you get nervous they're going to go get someone good. So I'm in that situation with Derek Mason being gone from Vandy and Jeff Fisher being high on their list. I'm terrified.
I do think, though, Freddie, that they're ultimately not going to go that route. It sounds like the defense coordinator for Notre Dame is their top guy they want to get. He was a former Commodore, so it'd be a homecoming of sorts. I think his name's Chris Lee, maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if they get Nick Saban there. I mean, there's no support from the university. There's no fan support. Recruiting is nearly impossible. It really doesn't matter, to be honest with you. I mean, James Franklin was there and did a great job, but you got to look at the landscape of the SEC when he was doing what he did at Vanderbilt. Georgia was down. Kentucky, there was a lot. Kentucky was down. There was a lot of teams that wasn't really playing at a high level. So
it was when Spurrier went on his run, right?
Yeah.
South Carolina won a couple of division titles.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter who Vanderbilt gets, to be honest with you.
Fisher was the top choice when Derek Mason got hired, and I think ultimately he just wanted to keep being and not going out recruiting. So Andy may want him, but it's a Fisher issue, I think. Would you want to go coach Fandy if you retired and rich and doing whatever you want every day?
No.
Yeah, being rich and retired sounds just much better than – like, look at Rich Brooks. He's out there, like, bragging about winning the senior club championship. That is much better than coaching Vanderbilt football. I can think of a lot of things better than getting paid a couple million dollars to coach Vanderbilt football.
Yeah, and I hate that for Derek Mason. I mean, he's a good guy. I mean, it's just a tough place to win, man. It really, really is. I mean, it's difficult. For several reasons.
I think Fisher, still don't think it's going to happen, but if someone's going to work, he's like a really like a hero in Nashville. I think at least for fan interest, it would help. Now, I'm not saying that's going to win games, but it might put some butts in the seats for a year or two. Still think it's not the move.
Well, you can't get any fewer than what they already have. So, you know, they at least have that going for them. But I want to go back to just the season, just kind of looking back, and I'm curious because there was entering the season, obviously there was a lot of hype, and we were wrong on many fronts. I think, especially the passing game, thinking that Kentucky could go essentially a year without passing and think that it would just be like riding a bike. It was not, it was a struggle, but Kentucky still beat the teams they should have beat. And then they lost some games that I don't think people expected them to win. And there was a couple of toss-ups out there. Now, my question to you all is, what was the one that got away? What was the play here or there that if something goes differently, the season changes on a dime?
I will bring up a play I already brought up. I'm still convinced if Kentucky gets credit for Rodriguez scoring, they could have won that Auburn game.
And I think if you win that Auburn game too, just the tone you set with and like the offense wasn't, blowing the doors off of Auburn's defense, but that was the most passing yards they had all season. So, you know, you win that game, you get a little bit of momentum. I would even point to the fake punt that Duffy had in that game that shouldn't have been called and was poorly executed. Not only did it, Not only did it put the game out of reach, but it kind of spoiled Kentucky's chances at running another fake the rest of the year. We never saw Duffy run again.
I don't have a play. I have a group of plays, Nick Rush.
Okay.
And that will be Kentucky's red zone touchdown percentage of 55%. Only 16 of 29 times Kentucky scored touchdowns in a red zone. I think that – number led to some losses that Kentucky should not have had.
I'm right there with you, Freddie. Charles, what you got for us?
Sorry, I didn't know I was on mute. I right when you asked the question, I was with Drew and saying one play to change the season, if I had to pick, would be the Auburn, Chris Rodriguez, hairs touching the back of the end zone, and for some reason they said he didn't get in. I'd say that because like you all said, it's the first game of the year. It's the big Auburn Tigers. And even though, you know, throughout the season, we kind of learned maybe they're not the Auburn that historically they have been, it sets the tone for the year and it builds that confidence that, hey, we, you know, we just took down Auburn. They're historically great. That changes the season. It changes the positivity of these young guys that don't really know SEC football yet, but they know that, wow, you beat Auburn, you're a good football team. And I picked that one without a doubt.
I'm glad nobody said the PAT in overtime.
Yeah,
that one was second.
That sucks, but I hate when a kicker gets blamed. I mean, there were so many plays in that game that could have gone differently. It putting the whole thing on one guy is tough.
Yeah, and then you go back to the red zone inefficiencies. He should have never been put in a position to miss the field goal either. I mean,
They had a was it a missed touchdown catch, Freddie, or like a hold or something that pushed him back after a big play?
I think both during that series, Nick. To be honest,
was the Upshaw. They went to Upshaw and it was underthrown, and it could have been a touchdown. Yeah, like if he just leads him, that he's walking in the end zone.
Yeah,
that's some points touchdowns on the board in that game.
Yeah, with the Rose early celebration and with that situation before the field goal, that was a game that. Yeah, I would think that Kentucky would want that back.
Now,
I'm still upset that he didn't get benched after that. But okay, you asked your question.
How do you put him back in to score? To well, potentially score the touchdown.
One game that I think we all knew at the time, like as it was happening, that you kind of give him a pass for was the Missouri game, because once the players found out that John Sharman wasn't going to be there, that's going to wreck you because they're smart. They knew the kind of writing was on the wall. It was devastating, but I appreciate the way that the team fought and played against Vanderbilt. The delay of game to start that game was incredible. That was an incredible moment. And I really think the best way to top off this gesture is for him to get the Broyles Award posthumously for the best offense or assistant coach in all of college football. And we talked about it a little bit, Drew, yesterday. There's no way they can give it to somebody else. They better not, damn it.
I mean, this, I don't know how many people vote, but it should be unanimous. And not that other candidates matter, because he should win every year with the year he had, but there's not even any guy on the list that jumps out that I might think they could even not give it to him, give it someone else. Like he is the clear-cut favorite, should get it without question. The way I don't even think he was supposed to go to Knoxville, and he makes that trip against orders and gets that win and holds that game ball in the air. They should have given the Broyles Trophy right then, but whenever they do, January, I fully expect it to be Schlarman, and it should be an easy decision.
I really hope so, Drew. I mean, I really do. He meant so much to that program and you know, just for his family and just for his players and the legacy. I really, really hope he wins.
And that speech he gave before the Tennessee game, that was awesome. That was incredible.
And really, it's not just – I mean, all that too, but he did a great job with that line. I mean,
the
cancer issue aside, he was a great football coach that turned those guys into one of the better lines in the country.
Man.
The best line in the country per PFF last week against South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So it better be John Schlarman when it's announced.
Now, I'm curious though, if we had to, I feel like the offensive MVP is pretty clear cut in a year where there wasn't a whole lot of good offense. Are we all in agreement who it is?
Yep.
The 12 carry a game guy?
No, I have one. I'm not going with the 12 carry game guy.
Not the 12 carry a game guy, Chris Rodriguez.
A good offense is a good defense. So I'm going with the defense because I feel bad for them. Some of those games, I wouldn't have been able to look at my offense in the eyes on the airplane.
I mean, you make a good point because in that there was a couple games where they were the offense. They were the team's offense.
You know, the only other player other than Rodriguez that it should be in consideration, in my opinion, is Drake Jackson. I thought he had a great year in a tough year. I thought he did a tremendous job.
Give the offensive MVP to the line? Is that cheating? I mean,
I was thinking the same thing, Drew.
There we go.
Boom.
Put it to a vote.
Well, we're not all in agreement then. Take that, Chris Rodriguez. Rewind it back.
he is honorable mention, others receiving votes in the effort to win it next year.
Yes, that's fair enough. Defensive MVP, Charles Walker. You're put on the spotlight. Only got one on a defense that forced approximately 73 turnovers this season. Top-ranked pass defense in the SEC. Who is the defensive MVP of 2020, Charles Walker?
I'm going to go with Jamin Davis. Thought he had a good year all around. You want me to say Boss Man Fat?
No. I'm saying that. That was a good choice. And I will add that, like, the Kelvin Joseph year is going to be one that's not looked back fondly, but the dude was good, and he's one of the best cornerbacks I've seen play at Kentucky, and nothing can take away from that. Even though I think fans are going to be left with a bad taste in their mouth, where they'll quickly point to him getting mossed on that picture of him versus Seth Williams, because
where Seth Williams is 6,000 feet in the air. I mean, okay.
Yeah, and it's a very emasculating catch. Like, how he even came back from that and then had the year he had is impressive in itself. He made pick sixes versus Jarrett Garantano look easier than they already normally look. But I think you could argue that not only was Jamin Davis the best player, I think you could argue he was their just best player overall, their most consistent. And you could even argue that he had the best play of the season when he had the 85-yard return for a touchdown against Tennessee.
That was awesome.
And especially too, Freddie, considering that, you know, he was playing Chris Oates' spot. We thought that was going to be Chris Oates' job, and they needed Davis to step up in a big, bad way, and he came through time and time again.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Oates, you know, it's a sad but yet motivational story of how he's working back, you know, physically, and visited the team, and he provided so much inspiration. But Chris Oates, the football player, that's a future NFL linebacker that Kentucky missed on the field as well. So I thought Jamin Davis did a tremendous job, and he would be my MVP. And then I would throw in another category, Rookie of the Year. I think that's hands down J.J. Weaver.
I will add another vote to join the crew with Jamin Davis for all the reasons you all said. I mean, he was – I don't know the numbers. They're not in front of me, but he played down a game. He played 9, everyone else 10, still led the team in tackles by a lot. Off the top of my mind, there I know of at least one fumble forced, one recovered, and a couple interceptions, the big one for a touchdown. And you have one in the end zone wearing number. I mean, I think he's a clear winner. That's just stuff coming to my brain off the top of the head right now. I also like DeAndre Square, not giving him the award, but always been a fan of his and thought he had another big year playing without his buddy next to him, Oates.
Hey, Drew, yes. Jamin's numbers, 89 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 2 interceptions to include the pick six, 2 pass breakups, 1 quarterback hurry, 1 fumble recovery, 1 forced fumble, and a block kick.
And that's in 9 games.
Yep.
I mean, I would take that in a 12-game year.
Oh man, and that interception you talked about at Mississippi State too, that was right before halftime, and that really took the wind out of their sails. That was a clutch stop in the red zone, and that which ended up leading to the first time Mike Leach had ever been blanketed, shut out, his offense had ever been shut out in a game. So Jamin Davis, real big time winner from Ludwici.
Did anyone receiving votes? Did we get a Jordan Wright mention? I feel like he found the ball a lot. I don't know what he did in tackles, but he was a playmaker.
The fumble recoveries against South Carolina. It's like, is that all he does? Is just if the ball's on the ground, just he is a magnet or something?
Last year against Virginia Tech to end the year.
Yeah.
Jordan Wright.
Big bowl game for him.
40 tackles, 4.5 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, an interception, four pass breakups, two quarterback hurries, two fumble recoveries, and two forced fumbles.
Not too shabby. I thought it was funny when he like stood up on the bench after one of the fumbles. I don't know if it was the first or the second, but the one that he just ripped from the South Carolina guy, that was a grown-ass man move. Like, you want to talk about emasculating? Yes, man just steals the ball from your hands. Like, goodness gracious.
Linebacker, you.
Can we do a grown-ass man segment next year every week?
Oh, yeah, that could be our segment of the week. Well, baby steps, though, Charles. We make up segments as we go. Then we get reoccurring segments. And then we actually produce the show instead of just like
Charles, you're in like 2030, like getting.
Sorry, guys. I don't know what I'm thinking.
Who goes out and.
The new bosses are impressed, though. At least he's got the foresight to look ahead. So there you go, Charles. The new bosses approve.
Big meeting with the new bosses today.
Yeah.
What time? When do I need to be there? No one told me.
Oh.
Well, you're part of phase two.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Maybe phase four.
Saw your starched dress shirt and thought, well, that guy does not work here. Not fit in.
Oh, man. But yeah, it's weird having meetings and, like, I don't know, it's just formal things happening. It's
structure.
Yeah.
What is all this?
Yeah.
What is this employee handbook you're sending me? What is this? Get this out of here. I'm a blogger. I work in mom's basement. That's my handbook.
Okay, I want to know, what was the best play of the year?
Mm-hmm. Chris Rodriguez, 79-yard touchdown run against South Carolina, untouched, and it was on senior night. Justin Rigg, Luke Fortner, Landon Young, and Drake Jackson opened the hole, and it was a perfect fitting for a descriptive play that defined the senior night and Big Blue Wall.
I like it, Freddie. But to your point, it did put a nice little bow on the game because there was the fake punt. And it's like, oh, God, is South Carolina really going to mess around and make this thing close? That play made sure that the season ended on a high note with the seniors leading the way.
Yeah.
But if I were at SportsCenter and I was making just like the highlight reel, I think number two has got to be Matt Ruffalo outrunning the Alabama defenders to jump on the ball. I mean, what a feat of athleticism.
Yeah. Not only Alabama defenders, but their two starting cornerbacks that I'm pretty certain were former five-star guys and that will play in the National Football League. So him outrunning, and again, we talked about this originally, but those guys were striding out, and Ruffalo's strides, I mean, he was taking 12 steps to their one. and he covered the fumble. I thought that was great. I love that kid.
Well, when you look at his scouting report, it says downhill runner. It doesn't say how many steps, but it says downhill runner. And he got down there and play.
I think he was moving faster than Jamin Davis on that pick six.
Which is my play of the game.
Oh,
did you set me up for that? Did you know that's what I was going
with? I was teeing you up and just wanted you to hit it out of the park.
2 minutes after a pick six, you get another pick six in Knoxville. I think at that point, all of us were looking at our TV, grinning from ear to ear, wondering what in the hell was going on, but we were loving it. And Jamin Davis took it 85 yards for the rare back-to-back pick sixes. And then another interception followed that one. So, really, any though, I'll take the whole sequence, but Jamin Davis' 85-yarder was the one that stood out.
I'm glad you brought up the reaction to that because I didn't think it was real. Like, real? Is this happening? I'm like, no, this can't be happening. There was definitely a time where it took me a good, like, the replay had to roll for me to really say, oh, okay. Yeah. Woo. This is awesome.
I mean, that was so crazy. If they'd done that against Middle Tennessee State, I'd still be like, whoa, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. Because, I mean, it was like a 40-yard pick six, straight into an 85-yard pick six, straight into an interception. After following a game that was full of interceptions, we were beginning to think we were the best secondary ever. And then you throw in the fact that it's at Tennessee, where you hadn't won in decades. It was really a surreal couple minutes of UK football.
Oh, man. That Tennessee game, that was a lot of fun. And hopefully the kind of lows don't overshadow the highs of that game, because, I mean, beating Tennessee at Neyland Stadium, it didn't have the same pop as Florida because there wasn't as much time in between. And, you know, we had just beaten Tennessee a few years back. But still, just having that day where you can celebrate the win in Knoxville and having Charmin there, that was incredible. That was an incredible win, a season-defining win at Neyland Stadium.
There's no such thing as, like, mid-season championships or, you know, I'm sure everyone wants to say it's just like any other game, but that was the final box to check off for Mark Stoops.
Right.
I mean, that I don't care what they do in the bowl game. That Tennessee game was the championship this year. He had ended Florida. Heck, he ended South Carolina. He ended all the streaks. They hadn't won a road SEC game in years when he got here. I remember the seniors saying that they had never been on a happy flight home.
Oh, man.
And that Tennessee at Knoxville was the last one. So, yeah, that was a midseason title game.
And now you move on to the bowl game, and we don't have details of when and where, but it's going to be different. You know, Charles Walker isn't going to be fishing out at the pond out in Jacksonville. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be the same kind of vacation-like setting.
Charles Walker don't fish, bro. All right.
You never went down to the pond, the watering hole with Landon or Cash down there and cast a line?
Nah, Brody. I was top golfing.
It's a shame they never let y'all, like, get on TPC. You know, I mean, you were staying.
Well, yeah, actually wasn't top golfing. I was in and out of meetings all day long. No, I actually did visit TPC with some of my buddies, you know, on the team when we were in Jacksonville. I think some of the coaches got on and played it, which was unbeknownst to me, but
can't confirm.
Yeah, no confirmation there. I don't know. There'll still be things to do, and I think this one is, you know, going to be a lot of, or this game, bowl game, will rely on a lot of the coaching, and really not the X's and O part. Yes, that's going to be a big part, but the motivation part, and how can you motivate your team, like you said, to play in a weird bowl game where you don't know where you're going to be at, but there's going to be 5,000 fans there if they allow fans, whatever the circumstances are. Can you motivate your players to give it their all for one more game? Some of them have to decide if they're going to opt out, come back next year. It's just a weird year, and I think the teams that have the closest camaraderie with their players and coaches will be the ones that win these bowl games.
Man, that was a good take, Charles. It sounds like something hear on, like, College Football Live or something.
I mean, yeah, I'll be the OC next year. I didn't call any of the players. I'll just get the boys hyped. I mean, I can do that.
Oh, and be the
– how does the guy known for fair catching not fish? I thought they'd jump right in the boat to you, just wave and catch them. Man.
I will. I don't hate fishing. One, I've just never really done it. Two, I've gone deep sea fishing one time, and I was, you know, like 15, and my dad only gave me half of the seasick pill, you know, it's supposed to calm you. So I was good for about 2 hours, and then I spent the next 3 hours just throwing up everywhere.
You half of the pill. Like,
yeah. Like, oh, you don't need this full thing. You're not old enough. Okay, great. Thanks, Dad. I don't know. I don't really like to sit still, believe it or not. I've never been diagnosed with ADHD, but pretty sure I have a very extreme form of it. So yeah, sitting there and fishing for 6 hours and not even knowing if you'll ever get a catch, that's not me. I can't do it. I need to know that there's light at the end of the tunnel, or that I am coming here for 6 hours and I'm leaving with something. That's why I can't deer hunt. I can't go out there and just sit down and not know if I'll even see a deer. So there you go. There's my rant on fishing and hunting. I'm sorry, listeners. I will do it, but I don't look forward to doing it and love it all year long. All right. I don't know when deer season is. I don't know when you can't fish. I'll do it with anybody, but by God, I won't do it with anybody. There you go.
I'm with you. It's okay, Charles. It's a long time to be outside.
It's just, you know, I love nature, but you know, whatever.
I could tell he wasn't into it when he said fishing instead of fishing. Somebody uses the ing on it. Most likely, they're not into fishing.
Well, I'd be with Cash at the locker room and Landon, and they're talking about fig baits and Trackmasters and bass fishers. I'm like, what? We got new formations to go over. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I think there is something to once you do, like, I think that's part of dad strength where you start to like stuff like that more because it's just quiet and you're like, oh, you mean I can just sit outside in the quiet for like 2 hours and maybe do a little drinking? Like, hell yeah, sign me up.
What's the song? Is it Trace Atkins, We're Just Fishing? Is that the country song? I mean, again, I think the idea of fishing is very cool. You get to go out and it's peaceful and you're doing it with someone and you build that connection. It's just never been for me. Maybe it will down the road, but there you go.
All right. Well, I'm writing into the description of the podcast now. Charles hates fishing and everyone who's ever gone fishing.
Got it. Done. No, hey, teach their own.
We got National Signing Day coming. Well, I hate Freddie. They call it early signing period. It's signing day. Nobody signs on signing day anymore. So I'm just going to call it signing day. National Signing Day is less than a week away. Right now, Kentucky's got 17 in their class. Six of the top eight players from the state of Kentucky, including top-ranked player Jagger Burton. You got his teammate, speedy wide receiver in Dakel Crowdis, another talented pass catcher, tight end at Jordan Dingle. And then Lavelle Wright, a solid running back, can do a little bit of everything and really put his team on the back to help beat Douglas earlier in the season. So a talented group of kids. And the thing is, Freddie, that's kind of nice is that it's not going to be a full class, kind of keeping the door open for like typically they might take some chances on some guys they've seen. They didn't get to see guys. So instead of taking chances, they can find other guys around the, as you call it, the waiver wire, the transfer portal, whatever you want to call it. That there's plenty of wiggle room to add folks once the floodgates open in January.
Yeah, I think the waiver wire will be critical for Kentucky, especially at the receiver position. I think it's vital that Kentucky locks down the best players in the state of Kentucky, especially offensive linemen that we've recently seen go to Alabama, Clemson, et cetera. And that's why Jagger Burton is such an important signee in this class. Not only the fact that he's a tremendous football player, but the fact that you lock down an offensive lineman to keep him home in Kentucky, much like you did Landon and Drake, I think that's vital. But you got to keep the best players at home. And I think with the coaches not being able to go out and see players, I heard Vince talk about it really affects the 2022 class more. Because they've not, seen some of the younger ones. Mm-hmm. But Kentucky does a really good job. Vince does a great job of identifying early talent or talent early and get those offers out. And so many of their signees, Kentucky was the first team to offer. And I think that holds a place with these kids. And that's the case with Jagger Burton. UK was his first offer, and that stuck with him.
No, you're definitely correct. So a lot of signing day coverage coming up to KSR. It's going to be a crazy week. Drew, you're getting ready to take a little vacation. Is it to an undisclosed location? Do you have a location yet?
I have a location. Did I just get really loud?
No.
Good. I spent most of last night trying to find a place to go, but it's tough. There's nothing worth doing right now.
Seems. Planning a vacation on a week's notice during a pandemic.
Well, I wasn't going to do anything crazy regardless. It was all going to be by car, fairly close, but I just can't find anything. So might be sitting right here on the couch.
Which would be nice.
No, actually, I have to get out of the cage. I feel like I've been in a cage in 2020. If anyone has any suggestions around Kentucky, somewhere close, maybe day trip, hit me
state
up.
State parks or you get a nice state park.
I'll probably
system.
Hit some of that stuff, you know. Oh, I'll find some fun, but no big plans.
Nice. Maybe finish that Christmas shopping, which I need to do. That's a good reminder. Got to check that off the list. Well, we got some other things to check off the list, so we need to get out of here and go read our employee handbook, among other things. But it's been fun talking Kentucky football with y'all this season. That doesn't mean we're done talking Kentucky football. Hey, it's a year-round sport, and as Kentucky searches for a new offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, we'll be with you every step of the way. Just keep your eyes peeled. We'll have a new podcast out. Me, Freddie, and Luckett are going to hop on Wednesday night of signing day to talk about everything that happened and all the players joining the 2021 recruiting class. But until then, keep it locked on KSR. And remember, go Cats and go Kroger.
And peep the technique. Don't sweat the technique.